The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Breaking news in the NFL Live is less than a week away from the start of the 2021 NFL Draft. A pair of AFC contenders made a major trade that has shaken up the back end of the first round. And who better to discuss this trade with than the man who broke the story himself? Good afternoon to you, Adam Schefter. What can you tell us about the AFC blockbuster?
Well, happy birthday to you, Field. And on your birthday, you, the Ravens and Chiefs completed a very significant deal that impacts Thursday night and the future of both franchises. The Baltimore Ravens trade Orlando Brown to Kansas City along with a second round pick this year and a sixth round pick next year. And you see what the Ravens get back, four picks in return for Orlando Brown, which now means that the Baltimore Ravens will be picking twice on Thursday night, number 27 and number 31. They do have an added hole now along the offensive line, but as ESPN Baltimore reporter Jamison Hensley pointed out, they are likely to sign Alejandro Villanueva, the free agent offensive tackle formerly of the division rival Pittsburgh Steelers, some point after the draft when the free agents no longer count against the compensatory draft pick formula. And so the Ravens come away with the extra picks. They will have a hole to address here. Kansas City shores up its offensive line. You'll remember during the offseason, cutting Mitchell Schwartz, cutting Eric Fisher. Moving on, they now have somebody to help protect Patrick Mahomes' blind side in Orlando Brown. The Ravens get the picks, and these two sides have been going back and forth for a couple of days before they finally settled in on the formula that they agreed upon late this afternoon, Field.
You don't often see rivals make a trade, Shefty, but that speaks to the motivation from both sides. I know you're going to be back with us in just a little bit, so thanks for the insight, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
And thanks for making all of us a part of your Friday on NFL Live. As again, I mentioned, we're now just a week away, less than that actually, from the 2021 NFL Draft. And I'm joined by Mina Kimes and Damian Woody and Matt Miller. I'm Field Yates, in case you're wondering. We got the latest and everything you need to know about the countdown to Cleveland. But first, there was a huge trade. So Mina, you get first dibs here. What was your reaction when you saw this legitimate blockbuster between two teams competing for the AFC Championship next year?
I was surprised because they're competitors, as you said. We'll get to that from Baltimore's perspective. From Kansas City's perspective, obviously this was an area of need for them. I like it as a football move. I mean, a couple of months ago, we were all panicking about this Chiefs offensive line after the Super Bowl and after they cut their tackles. Now we're looking at Orlando Brown Jr., Joe Tooney, Austin Blythe, DuVernay-Tardif and or Kyle Long and Mike Remmers. They're in decent shape. Of course, Orlando Brown Jr. is going from the run-heaviest offense in football to the pass-heaviest, but he did play left tackle for Oklahoma, so he's played in that kind of offense before. This is a great move for him, Field, because he's got a ton of leverage going into, you know, the end of his rookie deal. But Kansas City, look, they're not worried about that in future deals if this means they can go back to the Super Bowl this year. Now, from Baltimore's perspective, it's a nice return given that Orlando was nearing the end of his contract. But like I said, little surprise they made the trade with a division rival. Did give them more ammunition, but if they end up facing Kansas City in the conference championship, they might have a little bit of regret.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a couple things that come to mind for me. Number one, great, you know, great for Orlando Brown because now he's going to get left tackle money. That's a big difference between right tackle and left tackle. So kudos to him for making that happen and playing so well last year. And also, from Kansas City perspective, we know that they're rebuilding their offensive line. And I think this speaks to the volume of, you know, the depth at the tackle position in the draft. The Kansas City Chiefs probably felt, you know what, we're not going to mess around and try to get a guy that, you know, we hope can develop to protect our prize and, you know, our prize possession in Patrick Mahomes. We're going to go out here and get a more known commodity in Orlando Brown Jr., shore up that part of the offensive line so we can make sure that Patrick Mahomes doesn't suffer what happened in the Super Bowl last year against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, Damian, and everyone looks at this and says, oh my gosh, Kansas City gave up a first-round pick.
You were not finding an offensive tackle of this caliber at pick number 31 overall. And what do we all do that Sunday night in February, watching Mahomes get absolutely destroyed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? It almost looked irresponsible at times to have him out there. They will have five likely new starters on that offensive line week one of the NFL season with this move. They're also getting younger. And as Mina pointed out, Orlando Brown Jr., 1 year left on his rookie deal. Next year, he can likely play under the franchise tag. So it's not that expensive to where it's so cost prohibitive. It's also a team, guys. They almost got Trent Williams in free agency until San Francisco said, we'll make you the highest paid left tackle in NFL history. So Brett Veach and Brant Tillis, his cap guru, they know what they're doing. And it's also a team that they haven't drafted that well. So you might as well trade this first-round pick for someone who is going to be an impact right out of the gate.
All right, so a lot of activity this offseason, Damian, for the Chiefs' offensive line. My question is pretty simply, is the offensive line fixed enough? Because, as you guys have all talked about, that Super Bowl was unforgettable offensive line play.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think
Damian,
this goes up.
You tell us.
Go ahead, Mina. Go ahead, Mina.
I'm sorry. Yeah, anytime I can jump in front of an actual lineman. Yeah, I think it is. You know, we forget that it wasn't like the entire Kansas City offensive line evaporated at once. They suffered from injuries throughout the season, and Patrick Mahomes, being Patrick Mahomes, was able to Band-Aid over it. At the end of the year, we saw literally the worst-case scenario for Kansas City, right? They had basically blown up the entire offensive line. But it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't easy for Patrick all year. So all they need is just to be decent for him to be fun.
Yeah, listen, I agree with Mina in this particular situation. What we saw from the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line at the end of the year, particularly in the Super Bowl, was a worst case scenario. I mean, you're talking about, you know, both of their tackles were out. You know, the interior just wasn't up to snuff. So you look at the moves that the Kansas City Chiefs have made thus far on their offensive line. These moves are going to go a long way with Joe Tooney and obviously Orlando Brown Jr. and Kyle Long getting signed in free agency. They made a lot of moves to really bolster this offensive line. And Patrick Mahomes doesn't need five all-stars on the offensive line. He just needs decent protection for him to go out there and be the MVP that we all expect him to be.
So, Matt, now that they have their left tackle situation sorted out in Kansas City, understanding that Orlando Brown probably needs a new contract at some point, as you look towards the Chiefs' needs entering the second round, as they no longer have a first-round pick, what might be other areas for Brett Veach and his front office to address in the draft?
Yeah, they do have two second-round picks now that they get number 58 back from Baltimore. So I think they have to look at the wide receiver position, which may seem just like too many riches for Patrick Mahomes, but we have to remember Sammy Watkins is gone. He's now a Baltimore Raven. Mecole Hardman, a second-round pick, has not really developed into that premier pass catcher. Travis Kelce is starting to get a little bit older. I don't know if that will actually slow him down or not, but they do need another wide receiver outside of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. So I think one of these smaller, fast wide receivers, like Amari Rodgers from Clemson, Tutu Atwell from Louisville, those are definitely the type of players they've loved in the past. I have to throw Rondale Moore from Purdue in here, who, when he was a true freshman 3 years ago, was one of the best players in college football. Those are the type of electric wide receivers they could be looking at in round two. And then on defense, they do have to address the corner position. I think they would like to add another pass rusher. Tano Passignon left in free agency after being a second-round pick. So they do still have plenty of needs to fill. Even though they were in back-to-back Super Bowls, this is actually a roster that does have some turnover that's happening right now.
Well, we have so much more to come on this trade because we haven't even got to one other half of it, which is Orlando Brown's former team, the Baltimore Ravens. Such an interesting trade with so many tentacles to that. Coming up a little bit later on here in the show on NFL Live.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Well, speaking of Cleveland, the Browns have now become the first team to exercise a fifth-year option on a 2018 first-round pick, picking up Baker Mayfield's 2022 option worth $18.86 million fully guaranteed. That according to ESPN's Jake Trotter. GM Andrew Berry weighed in on Mayfield during his pre-draft press conference earlier today.
Yeah, Tom, I think you probably know me well enough. I'm not gonna really talk on that during in this setting. I just don't think it's appropriate. But obviously we know both those players are extension eligible. Across all player markets, yeah, certainly external factors may impact to some degree what you do with players on your roster, but by and large we'll make those decisions independently of what other teams do.
So Baker Mayfield took a massive leap in 2020, improving his total QBR, touchdown to interception ratio, and adjusted completion percentage, all by significant margins when compared to his 2019 season. His 72 total QBR last season is the highest mark for a Browns quarterback since the metric was first introduced all the way back in 2006. And he had the fourth highest increase in QBR of any quarterback to play in both 2019 and 2020. Mina, we'll start with you again. The fifth-year option is one thing, but is the next step for the Browns to give Baker Mayfield an extension this offseason?
I think they can wait. There's no rush, Field. As you just pointed out, Baker did take a tremendous leap last season. After having a pretty rocky start to his career, he came out as a rookie, was incredible, then took a step back. Then with the arrival of Kevin Stefanski, the firming up of the offensive line, took a huge step forward. There's no reason why Cleveland can't wait and see if there's some consistency on a year-to-year basis. I think sometimes we put too much stock into getting out in front of other contracts, when in reality, it's like, okay, are we going to save $5, $10 million? Why not have the certainty? And by the way, I don't think Baker Mayfield would mind, because then he gets to see if the cap goes up, which it probably will. He gets to have the Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen contracts, one or the other, potentially come in as well. And this is a guy who's bet on himself his entire career. I don't see why he would have a problem waiting another year and doing the same. I think it could be the best option for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, listen, initially I thought, you know, this would be a great, great thing to do for the Cleveland Browns if they got ahead of Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson as far as getting Baker Mayfield locked up, because we know the cost of what those two quarterbacks are going to be. But I think, when we had the discussion in our production meeting, one thing that Phil Yates brought up was, we don't even know what the cap is going to be next year. We know it's going to rise, but we don't know how much it's going to rise. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, I think for both parties, it makes a lot of sense to just sit back, wait, and let the dust settle as far as the salary cap is concerned. Because if Baker Mayfield goes out here and have another good season, that's a good problem to have if you're the Cleveland Browns.
We're seeing a theme of patience around the NFL. As I mentioned, Baker was the first 2018 first-round pick to have his option picked up, and it's April 23rd. Some context, the Saints got things rolling last year on March 16th, over a month earlier in a different calendar year. And I've heard from NFL teams that patience could be something you see. And I wonder if maybe what has happened this offseason, Mina, could be instructive. We've seen both Carson Wentz and Jared Goff traded not long after they were both signed to mega extensions. I don't want to say that Baker Mayfield's trajectory is going to be either of those players, but is there something to be drawn from how those two scenarios concluded?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I remember when the Wentz deal was signed, Field, it came in ahead of Jared Goff that summer, and it was applauded. The Eagles were applauded for getting out ahead of Jared Goff. Now, obviously, in retrospect, they regret it immensely and have had to eat a ton of dead money because of that deal. And look, Dak Prescott won his negotiation with Dallas, and I think they had enough evidence to pay him earlier. But at the end of the day, they got their guy, right? He is the Dallas Cowboy for a long time. Everybody's happy there. I think generally with these quarterbacks, it is okay to wait, even if, as in the case of Dallas, you end up paying a little bit more at the end.
I feel like paying a premium on quarterbacks is always worth it in the end, as you just said. So, exactly. Matt, separating just the quarterback part of the conversation, what have we learned about Baker's option, I should say? What have we learned from the way the Browns have handled Baker, just in general, from a roster construction standpoint?
Yeah, guys, I feel like the Browns, and I can't believe I'm saying this, are the blueprint right now for how you handle a quarterback, especially one who maybe struggled in his sophomore year. They went and hired a head coach who runs a perfect offense for Baker Mayfield. Then we saw him do it with a similar quarterback in Kirk Cousins with the Minnesota Vikings. They drafted Jedrick Wills. They signed Jack Conklin and Austin Hooper. They really built a team around Baker Mayfield that could support him. So I think one thing that we didn't see the New York Jets do, and I understand they want to get Zach Wilson in there, we didn't see them really try to build around Sam Darnold. We saw the Denver Broncos last year try to build around Drew Lock. We'll see where that goes this coming season. But I think the Browns right now are really a great blueprint, Damian, for go get an offensive-minded coach who can run a system that fits this quarterback that you invested a first-round pick in 2 years ago. And as I know you will appreciate, give him an offensive line that can just protect him for 4 seconds so he can make some things happen.
Matt, stop preaching that gospel here on TV talking about the offensive line. But listen, the fact that we're talking about the Cleveland Browns organization being the blueprint is crazy in and of itself, but they're absolutely on a roll right now.
The Browns on a roll. Not things we often say during this time of the NFL calendar. A new day is clearly upon us.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And breaking news here on NFL Live, as we told you at the top of the show, and from the man himself who broke the news, Adam Schefter, what can you tell us about an AFC blockbuster involving a very good young left tackle?
We'll field a big trade today that will help the Kansas City Chiefs shore up their offensive line and will help the Baltimore Ravens continue to replenish their franchise. You see the terms of the trade right there. The Kansas City Chiefs get Orlando Brown Jr. as well as a second-round draft pick this year and a sixth-round pick next year. The Baltimore Ravens get a first-round pick this year, added picks in this year's draft, and a fifth-round pick next year as well. And that means that Baltimore will be armed with picks 27 and pick 31 on Thursday night. They're scheduled to be on the clock twice on the opening night of the draft. That's worked out pretty well for the Ravens. In the past, there was a year where they had two ones that they used on Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis in the same draft. I think Baltimore's hoping for similar results on Thursday night, and the Kansas City Chiefs have been all in on their offensive line throughout the course of the offseason. You remember they signed Joe Tooney, the former Patriots standout offensive lineman. They went after Trent Williams hard and didn't get him. They got Kyle Long. Today they go out and add a potential left tackle for Patrick Mahomes. Now they have not had contract discussions yet with Orlando Brown Jr., which is part of the reason that Baltimore traded him, because Baltimore was not going to re-sign him to the type of deal that he was looking for. So Kansas City now will be left with that responsibility to go pay Orlando Brown, but he has a new home protecting Patrick Mahomes instead of Lamar Jackson.
Jeffy, I know you were sitting on this one today, so it's great that we got this story out. Good job by you. And the only person happier than you, Jeffy, is Patrick Mahomes, quote tweeted Jeffy's tweet with 5 smiley face emojis. Here's something to make Patrick Mahomes happy. The Chiefs rebuilt offensive line that Adam just referenced. Left to right, you're going to see, as we know, Orlando Brown, Joe Tooney, and likely Austin Blythe in the middle, throwing Kyle Long, plus the return of Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the NFL doctor. The Chiefs offensive line is looking much more formidable. And the Jets are expected to take Zach Wilson 2nd overall to replace new Panthers quarterback Sam Darnold. Here's head coach Robert Saleh, who addressed reporters on Thursday about the prospects of having a rookie quarterback.
I don't think there's risk. You know, it still comes down to having a good football team and building a good roster around everybody. I mean, there's players here that are talented. There's rookies that are going to be coming in that are talented. And so as far as pressure is concerned, there's no pressure on me. It's just there's always pressure. There's always pressure to put together the best football team we possibly can, regardless of who's playing.
Damon, you've got great perspective on playing New York because you played in New York. So what was your reaction to Robert Saleh's comments?
Well, you don't know what you don't know. You know, Robert Saleh is a rookie. He's a rookie head coach, and presumably the Jets going to be drafting a rookie quarterback. So the one thing about playing in this market, there is no in between. It's either, you know, the extreme highs or the extreme lows. You know, I've been a part of situations where we won an important game and it felt like you won a Super Bowl. I've also been in a situation where you go on a 3-game losing streak and all hell broke loose in the New York market. So that's going to be something that the Jets organization is going to have to navigate. And, you know, I bring up 2009, back when I played with the New York Jets. We traded up to number five to select Mark Sanchez out of USC. Our team was different than what this situation that's coming to bear for the New York Jets, because we had a very veteran team. We had probably the best offensive line in football, the number one defense in football. So we went up and got Mark Sanchez and plugged him in as a rookie quarterback. The Jets situation in 2021, this is one of the worst rosters in the National Football League. So this is going to be a totally different situation for the New York Jets to navigate.
Yeah, Damian, you mentioned the great offensive line back then. It's not so great now outside of the now second-year player, left tackle, Mekhi Becton. There are issues across that entire unit, and that, to me, is going to be the biggest adjustment for rookie quarterback Zach Wilson, assuming, of course, that he is the number two pick. Because when you watch his BYU tape, he is very exciting. The offensive line might be just as impressive at BYU, granted against, you know, some small school competition. But Wilson, man, I mean, he's got enough time back there to make breakfast. And not like cereal, like an omelet. He was so unpressured in college. That's going to be a big adjustment when he comes to the NFL. So as we look ahead to the Jets draft, how they're going to spend all of these picks, we need to start eyeing some offensive linemen after that number two pick, because they need a lot of help.
Yeah, I mean, and not only could he make breakfast, he could drink his coffee back there, because his offensive line was very good. And the level of competition he saw was not great in terms of pass rushers. Coastal Carolina, the only school he played that has a draftable defensive lineman in the 2021 draft class. So it will be very different going against Brian Flores, Bill Belichick, guys, Sean McDermott, guys who really know how to get after the quarterback. So I think, yes, the offensive line is an area they should address with pick number 23, whether that's an offensive tackle like Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, who can play on the right side. Unfortunately, the interior draft is not that great this year. Elijah Vera Tucker, who played left tackle at USC last year, but is more comfortable and more of a projection inside at guard, could be available for them. But to your point, Mina, they could come out of this draft with two offensive linemen early with their 10 picks, and I don't think fans could be that upset. The only downside is they're still rebuilding this defense as well, with now a defensive-minded head coach in Robert Saleh. They have to find another corner, another edge rusher. They have to fill out a lot of areas on this team. As Damian said, this is not a good roster. There's a reason most of us thought they would have the number one pick in this draft when the season started last year.
I'll be interested to see if Joe Douglas addresses the offensive line passionately, because a lot of the names that we showed you on that depth chart were players he acquired this past offseason, as in 2020. Connor McGovern, Alex Lewis retained on a three-year deal amongst them. I think it's always good, though, if you're a general manager, to understand that those are some costs. If you can upgrade with draft picks, go ahead and do it. Your quarterback certainly needs it.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Draft night hugs are back. That's right. We're less than 6 days away from the NFL draft. And Adam Schefter reported earlier today that Roger Goodell is fully vaccinated and will be allowed to hug players on draft night, just 6 nights from right now. And this will be the scene, as you're seeing in Cleveland. They're building the stage as we speak. That view you see right there, that's the actual stage where players will be greeting and hugging, if they so choose, Roger Goodell. Perhaps a chest bump, perhaps a dap, perhaps a pre-coordinated handshake. I'm in for all of it. Bring your best, NFL players. We didn't get it last year. We want to have it this year. All righty. Time now for a little bit of reading and reacting. And the Lions have turned over a new leaf this offseason, and their first pick is currently scheduled for 7th overall in round one. With a thin wide receiver group, a pass catcher could be a useful addition. But don't listen to me. Here's what GM Brad Holmes had to say during his pre-draft press conference.
But at 7, we do have a cluster of players that we're comfortable with picking, but at the same time, you know, we will be very prepared and, you know, also willing to move, you know, in either direction. But, you know, so we're still open in those regards, but there are a cluster of players that we'd be comfortable with. There has been discussions with other teams. I will keep those in house, but yeah, I mean, there has been discussions.
All right, Damian, what direction would you turn if you were Brad Holmes?
Well, Phil, listen, there's a glaring need for wide receiver with this Detroit Lions roster. They brought over Tyrell Williams and Breshad Perriman, but, you know, those guys aren't number one type of receivers. And when you look at this draft, especially in the top half, you got some special talent in Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle. They'll have an opportunity to get one of those guys at pick number 7.
The Panthers now have flexibility on their side after previously acquiring Sam Darnold in a trade, leaving them with plenty of options at pick number 8. Here's new GM Scott Fitterer.
Is there one specific quarterback that you feel like fits your team best out of those top 5 guys that everyone's talking about?
Yes.
Can you share?
No, there's actually several of them that we're excited about, just like there's several players, but we're not going to get into exactly who. We're very open to moving back. We're open to picking. It just depends on how the board falls, those first 7 picks in front of us.
All right, Matt, this is Scott Fitterer, his first time on the clock as a GM. Any advice for him?
Yeah, look at what you guys didn't do in Seattle. Build an offensive line. It is very, very simple. We're going to say this a lot today. Build the offensive line. You're going to have a young quarterback there in Sam Darnold. This is what they did not do for him in New York. Whether it's Penei Sewell from Oregon, Rashawn Slater from Northwestern, one of those players will be there at number 8 overall.
All right, and right after the Panthers at number 8 is the Broncos at pick number 9. Another first-time GM making his draft debut. That's George Payton, who was hired by Denver this offseason and chimed in during his pre-draft press conference on the team's confidence in incumbent quarterback Drew Locke.
Yeah, I don't know about week 1. We're really high on Drew. I like seeing Drew here every morning when I come in. He's working hard. He's trending in the right direction. As you know, he has a lot of talent. I think he's becoming a better pro. But we're going to still look at the quarterback position. You know, I've said since I got here, we want to bring in competition, and that's the goal. And we plan on doing that.
All right, so the Lions, Panthers, and Broncos, 7, 8, 9, may all decide to stand pat with the quarterbacks they have in place, but should they? Over the last 2 seasons, Sam Darnold, Jared Goff, and Drew Locke all rank amongst the 7 worst quarterbacks in the league in total QBR, making picks 7 through 9 very interesting as we inch closer to the draft. So, Mina, let's talk about this for a second. Should all 3 of these teams be at least considering taking a quarterback?
Yes. Full stop, Field. Yes. I mean, I've been very vocal about Denver because unlike the other 2 teams, I think that team actually is a quarterback away from competing. The state of their roster is very strong. I think we've seen enough from Drew Locke to bring in some legitimate competition for them. But Carolina as well and the Lions, look, they traded for quarterbacks, but there's a reason why Jared Goff and Sam Darnold were traded. Yes, they did make an investment in them, less so with Sam Darnold. Jared Goff, they'd probably have to eat some dead money to move on from him after next year. But frankly, I don't care. Because if Justin Fields or Trey Lance fall to either of those teams, you draft them. I believe that wholeheartedly. This quarterback draft is significantly better than the next one. Everybody agrees on that. You might not get this chance again. And worst case scenario, let's say your reclamation project works. Sam Darnold is excellent in Carolina. Then you've got a terrific trade asset, you know, in a quarterback you draft. We've seen that you're still able to get really good value for that. To me, that's smart GMing. Draft quarterbacks, see what you got, and then if you have to, trade them.
Listen, I agree with Mina. I think that, listen, if you don't think you got the right quarterback, you keep going after him until you do find the right quarterback. Now, I think with the Detroit Lions and the Carolina Panthers, do I think they'll draft a quarterback? No, but I do think spots 7 through 9 is the most intriguing spots in the draft, because I think if one of these quarterbacks, whether it's a Trey Lance or Justin Fields, starts to slide, I think you could see a bunch of teams in the teens, or maybe even as far down as 20, try to maneuver their way up into that spot to go get their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, guys, and I think one thing, I agree with what you're saying. Next year's quarterback class does not look as good as this year's, but I do think that, especially with Sam Darnold, it's hard to evaluate him without offensive linemen who can protect him, especially on the left side. Taylor Mott's a good right tackle. And I would say with Jared Goff, with that wide receiver core they have, that's going to be very hard to evaluate what you have in Jared Goff with those wide receivers. So I do agree. Next year's class, not as good. Maybe that would put some pressure on you to get a quarterback this year. But I do think the evaluation for Detroit and Carolina will be very difficult if they were to draft quarterbacks at 7 and 8 respectively and roll out Jared Goff and Sam Darnold with the roster they currently have. I know I constantly preach there's more than one round. You can get players in other rounds as well. But Detroit could be sitting there with Devontae Smith on the board. Carolina could be looking at Penei Sewell. These are really, really good prospects who are day one impact players. That would be – I know how important quarterback is. It would be very hard for me to take a quarterback after trading for a quarterback with those players on the board.
Man, knew I was going to say, yeah, but your quarterback is more important. And I was about to also say this as well, Matt. You know what you got in Jared Goff, man. I mean, he was coming from a dream scenario in Los Angeles. So, like, if I'm the Lions and Fields and Lance are there – you know, I understand why Brad Holmes, who of course comes from the Rams, traded for Jared and that this team is rebuilding. But I just really think you got to take the quarterback when he's available.
Yeah, quarterbacks are the most valuable commodity in sports. That much is for sure. But Matt, if the Broncos don't take a quarterback at pick number 9, where should they be looking? And does that mean they have to find one at some point during the draft later?
Yeah, I do think so. And I'm all aboard on Denver trying to move up in this draft, especially if Trey Lance starts to fall. I think he's a perfect fit for what they want to do in Denver. He's great with the run game. He has the arm strength for the elements. He has the athleticism. He has the maturity. And I do think that would be a very interesting situation with him pushing out Drew Lock and having all the weapons of Cortland Sutton coming back, a good offensive line. If they can't get someone in the first round field, I think it goes to that round two discussion. The problem is we're coming on here every day and saying, well, this team can wait till round two. 18 teams can't wait till round two to draft a quarterback because someone will jump in to take these guys. So while we like Davis Mills from Stanford and his arm talent, even though he only started 11 games, and we like Kyle Trask and his accuracy, and we like the arm strength of Kellen Mond, teams are aware that there is not a 9th starting quarterback in this draft class. And so as early as we're going to see the top 5 go, we're going to see a run on quarterbacks 6, 7, and 8 to start the second round or maybe even late first. So if you're Denver or any team picking after them, you're running into a situation where everyone knows that you need that guy if you don't take one in the first round.
Dialing it back to 7 through 9 for a second, those teams, I wonder if they're all desperately hoping that Atlanta takes Kyle Pitts at pick 4 for two reasons. One, it pushes the quarterbacks down the board for them to potentially draft.
Yep.
Two, if somebody like, I don't know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots wants to call up, try to acquire a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields, that price tag just went up because you've got two available rather than one.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Breaking news into NFL Live on this Friday is less than a week away from the 2021 NFL Draft. There was an AFC blockbuster. The man that broke the story, Adam Schefter, here with all the details.
Well, Field, there's always a financial component to all of these deals, and it's no different with the one that the Ravens and Chiefs completed today. And you see the terms right there. The Chiefs get Orlando Brown. They get a second-round pick. They get a sixth-round pick next year. The Ravens get an additional first-round draft pick, two more choices in this upcoming draft, and a fifth-round pick next year. Now, keep in mind, Orlando Brown Jr. wanted a new contract, and he and the Ravens had talked about a new deal, but it was clear that the two sides were going to be unable to bridge their differences. And once they could not get a new deal figured out, that's when Baltimore became open to dealing him elsewhere. Thus, who else comes in? The Kansas City Chiefs. You remember they signed Joe Tooney earlier this offseason? They tried to sign Trent Williams, who ultimately decided to re-sign with San Francisco, and so they never quite filled that tackle spot the way that they wanted. So today, they traded some extra draft choices, and clearly they went back and forth, these two sides, on the terms of the deal, making sure that it became official. And moments ago, the Kansas City Chiefs tweeted that they had agreed to this trade pending the physical, which Orlando Brown Jr. has yet to complete, not expected to be an issue, and it should be official by the time the draft rolls around on Thursday night, when Baltimore now will have the 27th overall pick and the 31st overall pick.
Shefty, you've been all over this story all day. Thanks for the great insight and joining us here throughout the show on NFL Live.
Happy birthday, Fields.
Thank you, Shefty. You are the best. Let's get to our analysts now for more on this trade. And Matt, we'll start with you. Could the Ravens, who have a bit more draft capital, be looking to move up in the first round now?
I think it's something they definitely have to entertain with the two first round picks, where we know there are four really good pass catchers in this class. Kyle Pitts, Ja'Marr Chase, Jaylen Waddle, and Devontae Smith. I think something Baltimore has to watch on draft night is how far those players start to fall. Do they want to get crazy and call Atlanta and say, hey, we'll move up to four for Kyle Pitts? I think it would be a lot of fun. I don't know if Atlanta would be willing to move back this far. That would be the only issue. It's how many teams want to slide all the way to the end of the first round. The Ravens do have a gigantic need at wide receiver. I've been pounding the table for them to add a big wide receiver, someone who can expand the catch radius and kind of the miss radius for Lamar Jackson. When throws get errant, you need someone who has a bigger catch radius than these small receivers we've seen. Elijah Moore definitely has the speed that they love from Ole Miss. Rashad Bateman from Minnesota would be a great fit for them as well. And then Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU, who we've seen had great production with Joe Burrow. Give him a good quarterback and he'll definitely produce. So they're in a good spot to not only get a wide receiver at the end of round one, they do have other needs. Let's not forget Matt Judon's gone. The Yannick Ngakoue experiment didn't work out. They need an edge rusher as well. And this is a good year to find an edge rusher late round one.
I'm trying not to be a broken record about Rashad Bateman, but you guys know how much I love him and how much I love him in particular for Baltimore, given that I think he's so complete, even, you know, more so than a Waddle. I understand why Waddle is being projected to go first. He's so explosive. But Rashad Bateman, to me, is a total package in terms of size, catch radius, true X. You can line him outside. He can win one-on-one. The route running ability is incredible. Yards after catch, perfect fit for Baltimore. And I think it's likely that he goes before 27, so they might have to move up. As Matt talked about, now they have ammunition to do so. Edge rush is the other glaring need for Baltimore, and that's a bit of a muddled picture because I don't think anyone really agrees on what order the edge rushers are going to go. It does seem likely like a Michigan Quiddy Pay will probably go off the board a bit earlier. So again, what this does for Baltimore, it gives them options. If they need to move up to get their guy, whether it's a Pay or Jalen Phillips or Azeez Ojulari, they now have that ability. They have enough picks in this draft to move around if they want, because really there aren't a ton of holes on this roster outside of the positions we discussed, and I wouldn't be surprised if they target those in the first round.
Mina, if they find a way to get Quiddy Pay, it would be such a Ravens move. Somehow they always land a player I love in the first round. But they do have a hole in their roster now, Damian. And how big of a deal is it that the Ravens no longer have Orlando Brown to pair with Ronnie Stanley along the offensive line?
Phil, I think it's a big deal. I mean, remember, Ronnie Stanley was out, was hurt last year with a significant lower leg injury. You know, so he's coming back. And now, you know, with the hole at right tackle, I know they're talking about signing Alejandro Villanueva, but I think that's a downgrade from what they had before. And also, remember, one of the reasons why the Baltimore Ravens weren't exactly the type of team they were 2 years ago was because of the interior of their offensive line. So the Baltimore Ravens have some work to do up front if they want to recapture what Lamar Jackson and that Baltimore Ravens offense were 2 years ago.
Yeah, Damon, you're absolutely right. I think there's been so much focus on Baltimore's pass catchers or lack thereof that what got lost a little bit in the decline in offense we saw in passing offense last year were the injuries on that offensive line, the decline in performance. I mean, they went from having one of the best offensive line groups in the NFL to having one that struggled at times with injuries. They changed up their running game a bit as the year went along with some success. But, you know, when we ask what is it going to take to get Lamar Jackson back to that 2019 level as a passer, it really does stem from the offensive line. I also think something that's been kind of underestimated was the loss of Hayden Hurst. So I actually probably should mention tight end is another position that they might target, even getting, you know, Boyle back from injury and having Mark Andrews. It's so important to this offense in particular. They might value it above other positions compared to other teams.
Matt, one thing that I'm having a hard time thinking about or sort of wrapping my head around is just the idea that the Ravens or the Chiefs might be two of the three, four top contenders in the AFC going into next year, and they're making a deal with each other. What do you make of that?
Yeah, Phil, as people have asked for weeks, do you think the Chiefs will trade for Orlando Brown Jr.? I kept saying there is no way the Baltimore Ravens would help the Kansas City Chiefs. Why would you make the best team in the AFC better? That is really hard for me to wrap my head around still, that they're saying, you know what, let's help Kansas City out. We didn't want to see Mahomes get hit that many times either. So that is definitely a bit of a head scratcher that they would make the best team in the AFC now that much better on the offensive line.
Yeah, it certainly would. Yeah, it certainly was something that I just, you know, as you think about the trade, it's not that I don't think either side made out well. It's just so interesting to see two teams that you think could be playing in January doing business right now in April. So we've got time for one more thing, and this one's a strange one from the Panthers news conference earlier today. What new Panthers GM Scott Fitter has learned about coach Matt Rhule. Wait, what?
He likes pickled eggs. There's an inside story on that one. So that's one thing I've learned about him.
I don't like pickled eggs. I just want to make sure everybody understand that. We went to Fargo, North Dakota, and the people in Fargo are amazing, absolutely amazing. And where we went to dinner, they said that was one of their delicacies. That was one of their best dishes. So I ordered it, and I ate it. And you know what? If I go back to Fargo, I'm getting them again.
Damien? Mina?
Bro, I don't even know what the hell a pickle egg is. Get me out of that.
Mina, your thoughts?
All I heard was Fargo, North Dakota, but I want to focus on something more important, which is that it is Field Yates' birthday. You heard it from Adam Schefter. I just want to reiterate it. Field is the best. He's the best colleague. He's so kind, so smart. The only thing I don't like is that he's a year younger than me, but otherwise,
sorry about that. You guys are all the best. Thank you for joining NFL Live.